to the May 2019 episode of The Voice of Oregon Workers, a monthly podcast from the Oregon AFL-CIO. I'm Tom Chamberlain, president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, and on this month's episode, we'll discuss the recent fight over the Portland budget cuts to Parks and Rec. We sit down with an organizer and two member activists. They mobilize the community to save jobs and protect facilities that working families rely on. And although the budget was passed, the fight continues. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to our May 2019 episode of The Voice of Oregon's Workers, the Oregon AFL-CIO's monthly podcast. My name is Graham Traynor, and I am proudly serving as the Oregon AFL-CIO Chief of Staff. And this month, we're sitting down with public service workers at the City of Portland who have been recently impacted by some wrong-headed budget decisions made by Portland City Council leaders just last week. But before we dive into this important discussion, let's ground our listeners in some important facts about the economy. Each month, we seem to hear about record-breaking growth of the economy, unprecedented low unemployment numbers, and a rosy outlook by many indicators on the health of the economy. But what's missing in that narrative? Well, what's missing is who the real winners and losers in the economy actually are. The real picture of winners and losers can be really illustrated in part by the current gender pay gap. White women still earn just 77 cents on the dollar to their white male counterparts. Black women make just 61 cents, and Latina women earn just 53 cents on the dollar. This economic system just isn't working for the vast majority of workers, and it's gotten significantly worse since the Great Recession. What's missing is also that folks are working multiple jobs and completely underemployed, and those same folks have fallen from the unemployment rolls. And what's also missing from this narrative is why, in times of record economic growth and tax revenue for state and local jurisdictions, are policymakers seemingly in an austerity mode so often with dramatic cuts to key programs, workers, and retirement security? This recent budget cycle for the City of Portland's Parks and Recreation Bureau illustrates this point well. The City of Portland is doing better financially than it has in years, and yet the proposed and now approved budget cuts basic services that thousands of Portlanders rely on and will have dramatic impacts on dozens of workers and their families. We are really lucky to be here with a few of the workers that have been on the front lines of this budget fight in Portland for months to get the inside scoop on this struggle, what it means for so many working families and community members, and what's next for this effort to protect vital public services that Portlanders depend on. The Oregon labor movement deeply values the dignity of all work and workers, and it's always refreshing to sit down with the folks that make our communities, our cities, and our state work. So I'm excited to welcome Christina, Troy, and Tommy to the podcast this month. Welcome, y'all.
Thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'm just going to have each of you individually introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit about who you are, your name, the work you do, and a little bit about your connection to this struggle. So who wants to start?
My name is Christina Harris. I'm an organizer for Local 483. Relatively new, been doing it for about 3 months, but previous to that, I was actually a park ranger for the City of Portland in Portland Parks and Recreation. An active steward in my work group and having experience both in the Bureau and a passion for, quite frankly, justice made me really attracted to this work, and that's how I got involved.
Great. Welcome, Christina.
My name is Troy Grote. I'm a recreation leader instructor with Parks and Recreation. I've been working with the city for about 6 years, two of which have been as a full-time employee, working mainly in community centers, teaching kids classes, working the front desk, facility maintenance. Really, there's not a whole lot that I don't do in the community centers, and I really enjoy my work.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you.
My name is Tommy Thompson. I'm a personal trainer by trade, currently employed with the City of Portland as a fitness recreation leader. So I am kind of their expert on exercise and wellness there at the Community Center East Portland. Similar to Troy, kind of wear a lot of different hats when you work in Community Center. So I help out at the front desk, help with do like our food giveaways at the end of the week, things like that. So.
Great. Welcome. welcome you all. We're excited to be here. Again, unfortunately, the circumstances are what they are, but we're excited to sort of learn a little bit more to make sure our listeners understand sort of what this fight was all about. But before we go there, let's start with the nature of the work that members of the Laborers Local 483 do. Who are the members of your local and the types of work that they all do in our community? Because I know it's parks, but it's also a bigger union than just the parks workers. So maybe if you could share a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Even within parks, there's a lot of diversity. We have the recreation side, which is focused around community centers and serving the community directly, and the laborers side, who do a lot of maintenance and planning around that. We also have contracts with folks that work at PBOT and BES, so really a wide variety of work. If you move about the city at all, I'm 99% sure you've seen one of our folks out there.
Absolutely. Yeah, don't the Portland city trucks say something about Portland, the city that works well? It doesn't work without the workers.
Yes,
right?
It's very, very important. Yeah, for every truck you see, there are probably about five employees.
Exactly.
So it's a large workforce to make things happen.
Great. Well, thanks for that background. So I'm going to ask Tommy and Troy both this question. So what do you love most about the work you do for the city of Portland?
Well, I personally got into this work following a passion of mine. I've been a lifelong skateboarder, and I saw an advertisement for a skateboard instructor, and I went for it. And I pretty quickly realized that I really enjoyed working with kids and communities, and I found more and more opportunities for myself within Parks and Recreation doing that kind of work. And I was fortunate to find myself in a full-time position, and which allowed me to really build lasting relationships with kids and families all over the city. And that's really been the most rewarding part of my work.
Awesome.
I guess for me, it's affecting change in people's lives. Personal trainer, I mean, it's a fun job, but I also get to work with a lot of people with different health problems, mobility issues, things like that. So it's rewarding helping somebody reach a goal to see themselves improve. We do blood pressure checks out there, wellness screenings, things like that. I help people make sure they're healthy and feeling good. But yeah, just the community aspect, I guess, is the most rewarding, building those relationships with those people, seeing them every day, interacting with them on a daily basis.
Yeah. And I'm excited to get to the later on in the conversation where we'll talk about sort of the community impacts to what just happened with the budget vote last week. But because I think you both touched on sort of what drives the work that you do and the passion you have for it. And I think the top line that I took away from what you just said is sort of the connection with community members, right? So any kind of off the top of your head, any notable stories or sort of anecdotes that illustrate what drives you to do the work that you do?
I mean, it's hard for me to think of any specific story, but really, like, being a part of those kids' lives and watching them grow and helping them and just being a friendly adult, it really means a lot to me. I can remember being a child and feeling like the world wasn't really for me, and coming across adults that were really friendly and helpful, and I know that I am that figure to some children, and that, I mean, I can't express how much that, how rewarding that is to me. And though it's hard for me to think of any specific instance, but I mean, every day when I go to work, there's some moment that makes me realize that I'm in the right place and I'm doing something good.
Awesome. Cool. Any other notable stories?
I mean, I guess for me, working in East Portland, it's a very diverse community. I don't look like a lot of the people around there. So, you know, it's taken the last 2 years to break down some of those barriers. And I'm not part of the Teen Force program, for example, but working with some of those teens and having them, you know, either slap hands or ask me to go to the dollar store with them or, you know, ask for a drink of my soda, things like that. Like, it's just those little, you know, moments that it's like, okay, you know, I've kind of made connections with people. And these were kids that, you know, wouldn't look my way or talk to me at first because just the trust wasn't there. So. Mm-hmm. For me, that's kind of, you know, been very rewarding.
Yeah, great. So I really appreciate that context for the work that you do. I think that's really important for listeners. So let's dive in a little bit deeper to what's happening, what's been happening over the recent months, and make sure that listeners understand what's been going on with this budget fight that we're sort of alluding to at this point. Maybe, Christine, if you could give us a timeline and an update on what's been happening that led to last week's unfortunate vote that we're going to sort of unpack a little bit today.
I February. I think that's when they presented it to the workers as well, initially. So we had about 2.5 solid months to try to educate the public about this. The overarching strategy was to educate the membership and have them reach out to their own networks and the public, and then have the public come together and speak out for these services and the workers, right? Mm-hmm. Because we know, like, many of the facilities are going to be closed, but with these cuts, I think many people were able to viscerally acknowledge that the type and availability of programming, even at the facilities that were going to remain open, were going to be dramatic. So we worked on that. We've done other things. We were able to hire a forensic economist with the union dues, make presentations to City Hall. We've made emotional arguments, economic arguments, with Joanne Hardesty's amendments, you know, even buying some time, you know, to come up with a solution. And unfortunately, you know, as you know, that didn't pan out. They maintained that there wasn't enough money to fund park services. And I mean, this is part of an overarching issue and I think philosophical disagreement between if parks and recreation services really are social programs that are paid for with our taxes versus, you know, more business style infrastructure with like revenue expectations and revenue drivers attached to it. My understanding is that for the last 7 years, you know, they've had to like add more funding to the budget while this is the most severe. And for me, just as not an economist, I'm kind of like, well, if for 7 years in a row, it costs more than you budgeted for. At a certain point, that's just how much it costs. Additionally, I don't know if this is too off track of your question, but I mean, like, the population of Portland is growing. The demand for these services are growing. Salaries, as they should, you know, continue to grow with inflation. It makes sense to me that the need for the budget should be increased, and it seems unreasonable that to say, like, well, it's not what it was 10 years ago. I guess it's just not worth it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that's a point of frustration I've been hearing from a lot of members, is that if this has been an ongoing issue, why is the brunt of it falling on the employees and the community and the people that use those services? I mean, and I think it's really easy to think that these are kind of like fun, like, extras in our lives, but really it's like teaching kids how to swim, you know. It's when, you know, older folks, you know, can be healthy and strong, like, it reduces the need to send out fire, you know, to help them. And I feel like this has kind of been viewed in a silo as a luxury and not as an integral part of our quality of life in, like, a more holistic system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for that. So you kind of alluded to some of the impact, both the Portlanders and workers. I want to dive into both of those, but let's just start with Portland residents, community members. What are the impacts of what happened last week going to really look like? What's that going to feel like?
Well, I mean, so East Portland, for example, I know we're going to be getting rid of one of our aquatics rec league, which is going to be less swim lessons. When we open up swim lines for swim lessons, those things fill up in like 20, 30 minutes. Like, we got people out the door signing up in, like, in advance and trying to pre-register, things like that. So those are going to, like, be reduced. It's things like, you know, to the public, I mean, obviously certain community centers are closing. So, I mean, you know, what's the pool that they're closing?
Columbia,
yeah. So, I mean, there's no other pool in that area. So it's like people may not partake in swim lessons because they're just too far. I mean, not everybody has the luxury of being able to, you know, commute certain distances. So, I mean, that's the impact on the community. I think programs are going to be suffering. You're going to have overworked employees, higher turnover. They're cutting management even in the back. So you got like two managers managing this big community center. They're going to be on split shifts, overworked. I don't think anyone's going to stick around. I honestly like feel bad for the people who kept their jobs a little bit, because it's going to be so hard for the rest of them to do what they do, and the program's going to suffer, and in turn, our communities will suffer.
So just to clarify, which community centers are right now slated to close, just so listeners know the scale, we know?
Selwood Community Center, Columbia Pool, And then there are some that are no longer going to be functioning as they haven't. What I've heard is, and what I've seen, Fulton, Hillside, and Laurelhurst, if they can't find people that want to lease them, they're going to be closing those.
Got it.
And I haven't heard of any leads for who's going to even be doing that leasing, which is part of the frustration around making these decisions in a really, I feel, short-sighted manner. Like, it's one thing if you have a plan, but if you don't have a plan anyway, like, why couldn't we explore it a little bit more? And I mean, just in terms of the, like, the value of the land on the ones that they will be, you know, straightforwardly, like, taking out of the portfolio, I think is really short-sighted. I mean, the Selwood one is essentially on 13th and Tacoma, and that's one of the most expensive areas.
Mm-hmm. And that neighborhood just got rid of their Boys and Girls Club about a year ago. So there's really not a lot of child care options in that area now.
Any other impacts to Portlanders that are worth noting?
When fall time comes around, I think everyone's going to be shocked. They've provided bridge funding for the summertime, so families that have signed up for programs, summer camps and things this summer, they will run as normal if the employees stick around to teach them. But in the fall time, we're talking about getting rid of entire job classifications. The instructor position is gone. So while they may offer some of the courses and programs that are currently being offered in the school year, I don't think that they're going to be able to offer them at the same level. And I don't believe that they'll be able to take as many participants. And I don't know who's going to teach those classes and programs. Like, My classification is a recreation leader instructor, and at other community centers, that position runs the after-school program. So parents that are assuming that in the fall time they'll have the same after-school program that they've been using for years, I think are going to be a little shocked when they go to register and find out that their programs have changed. Maybe they don't exist. Maybe the enrollment number is a lot lower than it was in the past. And Tommy's right that the classes that are popular, the courses and programs that are popular in Parks and Recreation do fill up really fast, and wait lists are long, and parents are already frustrated by that.
Mm-hmm. And, I may, one other program that's being cut is the drop-in childcare. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it is literally, like, the drop-in childcare program is being lost, but now those parents also aren't able to use the gym because you can't, you know, watch your kid and exercise.
Wow. Pretty dramatic impacts, clearly, to the community. And I think everybody has alluded to the impacts sort of by extension to workers. So why don't we cut right to that? What are the direct impacts to workers based on sort of what happened last week?
Well, I think it's important to point out that a lot of the people that are working full-time positions with the city now, a lot of the positions that are targeted for layoffs now, they're people like myself who have worked for years part-time with Parks and Recreation and were recently made full-time. And I know that my situation is not unique in that I struggled quite a bit in those part-time years, but I really enjoyed the work I was doing with Parks and Recreation. I passed up some more consistent opportunities so that I could continue doing what my passion was. And myself and a lot of other employees in my situation felt really rewarded when we landed those full-time positions and we thought that we had found a home with the city. And now we all feel like the rug has been pulled out from under us and we don't feel that we are valued by the city leaders, which is tough because we do feel value in the community centers. We do feel value with our coworkers, but now I think morale has hit pretty rock bottom in the community centers, even amongst those that are keeping their jobs. And I honestly feel really dejected. So that's my takeaway at the moment.
I mean, Dave, we spoke about the bridge funding for summer. I know that doesn't include anything for fitness, so I'm done July 1st personally. I have fellow coworkers. I mean, one guy is going through cancer treatment, another one's a brand new mom with a new kid, and she just got a coordinator position, and so she's bottom of the, you know, she's first to go. So, I mean, these are real people being impacted that I'm not going to lie. I'll land on my feet. I'll figure it out. But there's a lot of people that this was their, like, shot maybe of getting out of poverty or, like, getting a pension or a retirement or actually, like building a foundation for life. And they may not have another opportunity. And that's really the most disheartening part for me about all of this.
Absolutely.
I think it's really important for us to point out, too, that Tommy and I are both sitting here speaking to you as white men, but most of the positions that are being targeted are filled by people of color, women and people of color, disproportionately. And that's been really difficult for us, for everyone involved.
These are our friends and family. I mean, I know Troy can speak to this as well. Like, these are people we build relationships with. These are people we spend more time with than our, you know, the people outside of work, like you, when you think about it. And I spent the last 2 years with these people building relationships in these community centers. And so that's been the hardest part, is watching them struggle and just the way that leadership has treated all of them and us. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they can do better, and mm-hmm. they should have done better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm sorry to both you and all your coworkers, obviously, that this has been the circumstance. I know it's kind of a difficult subject to talk about, especially given we're just a week off of an unfortunate vote, but I appreciate you sort of sharing for listeners what this all means and how it's impacting people.
We're happy to have the opportunity to share this with everyone.
Definitely. Cool.
So the labor movement, I've been around a little while, so I'm excited to also think about the worker organizing wins that have happened within this exact bureau, right? It seems like not too long ago that was a really bright spot for the labor movement, where when we're always excited when new workers join a union and begin to realize their collective power. So I'm hoping you can maybe tell listeners a little bit about some of those inspiring worker organizing efforts that have been happening in recent years within parks.
Would you guys like to discuss the arbitration?
I can tell you that my position was created as a result of a union arbitration. My understanding is that the city was sued by the union for basically relying on a part-time workforce and working them out of class. I can attest to that as a part-time worker during that time. There were definitely times where I was doing the work of a coordinator or above. And when the arbitration happened, I think somewhere around 100 full-time positions were created. And it seems like now close to 70 of them are on the chopping block again. And I don't understand how the city thinks that it can revert to a part-time worker model and not find itself in the same situation that got them in trouble in the first place.
I think history is going to repeat itself, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had these arbitrations before. I watched 2-3 years. They're going to happen again. They're going to put themselves right in the same position.
Tommy mentioned that, you know, there's only going to be one or two coordinators at these large community centers left, and that's going to leave a large share of work to be done by part-time employees. And it's hard for me to imagine that people aren't going to end up doing work out of class in that situation.
Well, I think when you speak of collective power, what I'm noticing among people who've been involved in this movement with us the last couple months, and then myself personally, I mean, we're kind of fed up with city council, and so there's a lot of people getting together to try to, you know, move forward with, you know, positive movements as far as political aspirations, mm-hmm. things like that. You know, I'm trying to get involved with the politician's school here with the union. They set me up with that, so I think that's it's getting more involved. A little eye-opening. This has been an eye-opening experience for me, mm-hmm. as far as what goes on in the city of Portland.
Great. So my understanding is that that at least in a portion of the Parks and Rec budget, that things have been being operated under budget projections for a number of years. Is that correct? Did I screw that up?
Minor correction.
Okay, so
The general fund has been doing really well. When you look at the city financials as a whole, we've mm-hmm. been bringing in more money than we've been using. I don't need to get into like the nitty gritty of it, but one of the like quick and easy things I like to point to is that the city of Portland has a AAA credit rating, or one of less than 100 cities in the entire nation that has that. We're above the recommended amount of money for a savings account, for lack of a better word, like should a natural disaster happen. I think we know that intuitively. Like, as you mentioned, you know, you can see the growth
mm-hmm.
in so many arenas. But yeah, on the whole, the city of Portland is very financially strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know?
And unfortunately that, you know, these cuts obviously, you know, sort of, I recognize budgets are complex, especially big city budgets, but it's unfortunate that, especially given what we talked about earlier with the previous sort of conversations and other budget cycles, you know, sort of seeming to be a, you know, a different reality, and this budget cycle really taking a turn for the worst for
mm-hmm.
this one bureau, right?
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I find so frustrating with the parks budget in particular is that time after time, the reason we've been hearing for a lot of this is the cost of PERS and the, you know, very high salaries of
mm-hmm.
parks employees. You know, I find that frustrating for a couple of reasons. Like, A, nobody's teaching preschool or swimming lessons to get rich. While
mm-hmm.
these are living wage jobs, they're on the lower scale of most city work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, additionally, I think it's kind of disingenuous. Personnel costs are some of the more predictable costs you have
mm-hmm.
when planning a budget. And,
mm-hmm.
and to lay this at the feet of the employees, I think is untrue and unfair.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what Hardesty said, it's a budget's a moral document, right? It really shows the priorities of our leadership. And
mm-hmm.
I keep saying over and over again, Portland deserves an award-winning parks and rec system. And
mm-hmm.
I don't think our city's leadership feels the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say a couple things about the PERS and what Christina mentioned about, you know, being paid living wages. Most, you know, these cuts are directed at the lower rungs of our employment. I think anybody is making over 50 grand that these cuts are directed towards. And like I said, most of these people have been full-time for less than 2 years, so we haven't built up a great PERS account or anything. I know that the people that I work with aren't doing this for that, for the PERS. They're not in it for that salary, and
mm-hmm.
I think the numbers would prove that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, related to PERS, it's unfortunate that the budget vote in the city of Portland happened on Wednesday, and on Thursday, the state legislature, led by a Democratic majority, passed across the Senate floor a PERS cut bill, and I think all with a very similar sort of lens around, you know, the cost of, it's the cost of doing business. If you want more revenue, then it's got to, you know, we've got to balance the PERS unfunded actuarial liability, and it's a disingenuous, intellectually sort of dishonest discussion to be having about PERS. We had a whole segment last month about PERS, but it's unfortunate that on the heels of this, that vote happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume, like you both alluded to and Christina mentioned, I mean, clearly these constant attacks, you know, are tough, right? They're not, I mean, especially for folks that are directly impacted, but even for those, I think, as you both mentioned, that are still able to maybe have a job today, or they hope they have a job in the Parks Bureau, for example. You know, you mentioned morale and whether or not the kind of the open question really about whether or not people even stick around, right? And what the overworked nature of their employment situation will look like when, you know, fewer services are available and more demand for the services that exist. And I don't know if you've got anything to mention more about the sort of the morale and the impacts of all these attacks, but I know cumulatively, this is really a difficult time for public service workers just in general to feel valued. Right.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely.
I mean, even this week, I still feel like we're kind of in the dark as next steps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking to my building supervisor. He doesn't even know things because just nobody's really talking about it. And it's like, you know, this people's lives are going to be affected. And so,
mm-hmm.
you know, everyone still kind of feels like they're in the dark and decisions have been made. So,
mm-hmm. yep.
Mm-hmm. I've been making a lot of site visits over the last month or so, checking
mm-hmm.
in with people. And I think for a lot of people, they were genuinely surprised. They work in these positions every day, and they're really, like, customer service ninjas and, like, on the whole, really good people. And
mm-hmm.
I think that they had this expectation that, you know, this bureau was going to have their back, for lack of a better word. Like, I've had so many conversations with people that are, well, I would really like to use a sick day, but, you know, we're really busy that day, and I think I should, you know, hold it. And, you know, as a union organizer, it's like, no, take the sick day. But I just share that to say, like, that I think it came as a genuine surprise to people, like given all the talk around like we're Parkies and we're a family, and then to have not only these cuts happen, but to have these cuts roll out in such a way where they feel that they're not being given all the information up front and the full story. And whether it's a issue of they genuinely are scrambling also under this recent city council vote, or they're, you know, holding off on sharing the information, the result is the same, and the morale is at an all-time low.
Yeah, we are the face of Parks, and for the past few months, customers come in and they want to know what's going on, and they want to know what summer's going to look like, and they want to know what their child care options are going to be in fall. We don't have answers for them, and it hurts us, and it's hurting the public, too.
So I want to transition us a little bit as we get closer to wrapping up today's conversation about, I'd love to hear more about just some highlights of the ways that you feel, you all feel the campaign really brought to light sort of the concerns of the community. I think you talked a little bit earlier about the campaign dynamics and the phases of the campaign. Everybody was caught flat-footed, but then you worked to ramp up over a course of a number of months. But what were some highlights, some nuggets that were really, despite the outcome, really at the moment powerful sort of examples of what these services and this bureau means to Portlanders or community members?
Well, I said earlier that when I'm at work, I know that the community appreciates the work that I do, and I know that my coworkers appreciate the work that we're all doing. And at this point, that almost comes as a given to me when I work at the community centers. So it was really great to see the community come together and express those feelings and those sentiments and appreciation for our work in a different setting. I don't think anybody goes into a budget hearing feeling comfortable. Nobody's really used to that setting, and it's set up sort of like a courtroom. So I don't think anyone goes in feeling relaxed, but people came out and just bared their hearts in front of city council and explained how much these services mean to them, explained how much staff members like myself and Tommy mean to them and their families, and it was really powerful for me. That was definitely a silver lining of this whole process for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the turnout, I think, I mean, it was unprecedented at that budget vote. We had two side rooms full of people who wanted to give testimony. They had to postpone the vote the next day. I mean, we came out in droves. It was something that people say was unheard of. Budget gals and not. They're like, yeah, usually we're the only ones here.
Right.
So, I mean, we really kind of set a precedent, and it's unfortunate that our leadership didn't see that and make the right decision.
Mm-hmm. I remember there was a big rally across the street from City Hall that was regarding community center closure proposals. I don't know if it was earlier this year, but I just remember, I think, related to what you all are talking about the budget hearing, I remember being just taken aback by an entire, like, literally, like, an entire park full of moms and dads and kids and community members that were leading a rally. It wasn't just a sort of a union rally. It was actually a community-led rally that was all about some of the more recent, I mean, not this exact round of proposals, I don't believe, but months ago I remember this, and I just remember thinking, like, just how meaningful these services are to sort of so many Portlanders, because they were taking their own, you know, efforts, or taking the efforts into their own hands.
Can I share a story? Were you going to tell a preschool story?
Go ahead.
You should tell.
No, I think we're thinking different things.
Okay. that just makes me think of this story. There's a really active contingent of mostly, not exclusively, but mostly moms around the Selwood community center that were being closed. You may have seen this already, but it was led by Kelsey Owens, and they took all of their preschoolers into the mayor's office and, like, held preschool in his office in protest. And if you want to, I'm sure you can Google it and see it on YouTube, but it is so funny to watch. I don't know who it is, someone in his staff, bless his heart, doing the best that he could, but just not knowing what to do with these adorable kids and these smiling moms that were like, no, do you want a snack? Like, just like killing them with kindness. And
that's amazing.
I love that. And it was something that I wasn't expecting, and it was something I felt really inspired by.
Yeah. Nice. So on that note, what are some of the most important takeaways from this campaign and sort of the ongoing fight? Because just because last week's demoralizing vote happened doesn't mean that this fight's over. So what are some of the takeaways that are worth sort of sharing with listeners?
I think paying attention to Hardesty and what she did. She stood up, went against the flow of everything, really was a voice for us. I think paying attention to her leadership. I think, a big thank you to her. We didn't get the outcome we wanted, but she was there. She had our back, so I appreciate her.
Yeah, she really impressed me throughout the hearings. She was one of the few council members that would show up early. She was filtering through the crowd and having conversations with people. It really felt like she was there for the people, and I was really inspired by her throughout this process as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's uncreative, but the same thing. Like, that was the big takeaway. Like, she really, really went out on a limb and demonstrated some real leadership and standing up for these services. I mean, she came up with multiple amendments, taking money from different funding sources, and you can just tell, like, that's not easy to do. She thought about it, put real work into it, and then was very brave in the way that she was able to put those suggestions out there, even though they weren't popular, and I'll always be grateful to her for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty impressive. Just the budget hearing that I attended, it was really pretty obvious that Joanne Hardesty was there before everybody, as you just said, and sort of was working the crowd and hearing from folks as others showed up like right before the deadline of the start for it. So, any next steps for the campaign? Anything that listeners can do to support these workers and this current struggle? I know there's some gray areas, so it's a little difficult to know exactly what the action is. But any next steps or things to rally folks' support for?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're definitely always interested in doing things like this to share our story and, promote our advocates as much as possible. That's the conversation we're having right now. But in terms of moving forward in the campaign, I think just continuing to share our story and work with our allies on this to try to rebuild some of what we've lost.
I'd say, there's people in the community organizing, there's talk about park districts, blowing measures, things like that. We need funding for parks. Portland wants award-winning parks. We're going to get it. I mean, personally for me, my fight's not done. I mean, I've lost this battle, but the war's not over. I'm going to get the funding back eventually. I'm going to get these jobs back. I'm going to get these programs back up to where they deserve to be, because that's what Portland deserves. So that's what I'm at.
Absolutely.
I think that I've really seen the strength of community throughout these hearings, and I think I would just encourage people to, stay involved, stay alert, and continue to have these conversations, whether it just be with your friends and family, or, write a letter to a newspaper. I think this conversation is really important, and I don't want people to forget about it or think that it's over. I think that we all, people have demonstrated that we all have some really common values, and I think that there's ways that we can connect with each other and organize together. And we'll see what that looks like in the future. I'm not sure at the moment.
And I'd be remiss with not making a plug for just tax reform in general, and the way that we fund critical services that Oregonians and Portlanders deserve. I think we've made some gains. The Student Success Act that passed a few weeks ago to use a corporate tax increase to fund K-12 education is a big, important first step, but it really is targeted for K-12 education. And that's not to say that even when that's fully implemented, that corporations are paying their fair share in this country and in the state and in this city. So I think what Portlanders and Oregonians deserve point, I think, is well taken. And sort of who pays and what's fair and how do we make sure that everyone, corporations included, are paying their fair share.
There's been a lot of talk about, you know, funding education, and I think that's really important, but it's really important that people remember that a child's day isn't done at 3 o'clock when they get out of school. And, you know, the services that we offer at Portland Parks and Recreation fill a really important gap for working families.
So we are running out of time, but I want to just give everyone just a quick opportunity to say a few final words, just lasting thoughts maybe you forgot to say, and then we'll wrap things up. Who wants to start?
I'm happy to start. I know it's easy to feel dejected in this process, but it always comforts me to remember that, like, we're doing better than we were 50 years ago and 100 years ago and 150 years ago, and that life is long, and there's still plenty of time to keep moving forward in a positive direction, and, you know, as long as we continue to work together, we can make it happen, even if it's slowly and even if it's for the next generation. I know that's cliche, but I still maintain it's very, very true, and,
yep, I agree.
And that gives me a lot of comfort.
Great.
I'm not quite sure how I would wrap things up today. I would just like to thank people for listening, and I hope that you've learned some things, and I hope that this stuff is as meaningful to you as it is to us, I would encourage you to thank a teacher, thank somebody that's important in your family's life and means something to your child, let them know, because they might lose their job in a couple months, so hearing that kind of stuff really helps us, so thanks for listening.
I guess my piece is, I really feel Portland has a lot of potential. I think big change starts small, starts local. I think if we start implementing some innovative strategies and new structure, new plans, new ways of doing things, we could be a model for other cities and other jurisdictions, things like that. And I think we can have a bigger impact. So I'm personally focused here locally and trying to do the best I can for Portland because I think it does have a lot of potential.
Great. Well, thank you all for joining us on this month's podcast. For listeners, you've been listening to the Voice of Oregon's Workers, the Oregon AFL-CIO's monthly podcast. If you like what you've heard, please share us wherever you access your podcasts and stay tuned for next month's episode. Thanks.